Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Mark Kortz from Harris, Minnesota. Mark is a longtime walleye and bass tournament angler. And Harris, Minnesota, right off of Mille Lacs Lake there in Minnesota. So central Minnesota guy, and Mark is just the all-around outdoorsman, loves to hunt, loves to fish, just love getting the story. So we spend a little bit of time getting caught up with Mark and what he's been up to lately, especially the preparation for the tournament season coming up. You know, I think, you know, listening to guys like Mark, been tournament fishing, as we find out, for 26 years. And you know what, Mark, he's still a young guy. He's got a lot left to give us, but he's been tournament fishing for a long time, and he's got plenty of stories. But, you know, just hearing what his off-season preparation is like, his pre-tournament preparation, it's just kind of fun. I think we all have that, whether we're a tournament angler or not. We all enjoy the, you know, the season preparation. You know, right now it's spring for those of us that haven't gotten the boat out yet. You know, that's kind of the situation we're in. We're thinking about fishing a lot. We're playing a little tackle in the garage, getting rods rigged up, just, you know, double checking everything and, you know, charging the batteries on everything and just doing all that prep. You know, obviously that is amplified when you're a professional tournament angler like Mark is. You know, he's got to re-rig a new boat just about every year, if not every year for sure. And, you know, all the latest and greatest stuff. And you know what? That's real stressful. There's a lot that goes into that. These guys, you know, they're involved in every element to that. Rigging the boats, you know, rigging all the new stuff and you know, just making sure everything is right and tight, and just some great stories there. And then we talk, you know, getting into the fishing. Mark is on his way out to Lake Erie for the first stop of the National Walleye Tour. And we talk about pre-fishing out there and just how to break down big water. For many of us, you know, we don't live on or near big water for it to be you know, a regular thing. For many of us, we got to travel or go to destinations to fish real big water, and so you know, Mark just definitely has some great tips and just some strategy for him, how he breaks down and finds and then catches big walleyes on big water like Lake Erie. So that's what we got in this interview. We've got Mark Kortz. Let's get into it. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Chalet on Mille Lacs. The Chalet on Mille Lacs has all your lodging needs and more for your next vacation on Mille Lacs Lake near Garrison, Minnesota. And when I say this lodging opportunity has all your needs and more, I'm talking about two private shorelines, including a protected channel to safely park your boat overnight, a great outdoor feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake, a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom that includes 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multi-families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews from past guests on the website or book directly at Chalet on Mille Lacs. That's www.chaletonmillelacs.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Experience the thrills of an unforgettable fishing experience like never before with Flop Industries. Whether you're a novice angler or a seasoned veteran, Flop Industries products are meticulously designed to enhance your fishing experience when it's time to hit the water. Join our community by visiting flopindustries.com and elevate your passion for fishing with gear that matches both your skills and your style. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Somebody like you, been in the industry a long time, you've been doing this for a long time, how do you kind of articulate, you know, the off season and getting ready and prepared right up until now where you're like driving to the tournament? What that's like for you?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I guess I've been doing it 26 years now. It's crazy to say that number, but it's insane. One of the things that never ceases to amaze me, though, in all 26 years, and every year I tell myself, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more prepared and have everything ready to go. but it's always going until the last minute before you're really prepared to go. I mean, last night I was up until 11:30, finally getting the boat fully rigged, getting everything packed. Got back up this morning at 5:30 and did some laundry and was on the road by 6:30. So, you know, it's one of those things that it never changes. It's always the same. It's always panic at the last moment. You know, I mean, for the most part, all my tackle, everything was ready to go. It was just a matter of, you know, getting everything in line. And when I talk about getting everything in line, it's electronics, it's batteries, it's everything, the boat, the motor. You know, typically when we leave for that first tournament, we don't have open water back in Minnesota. So it's one of those things, get to the tournament, breaking your motor. And that's going to be the same thing this year. It just, I had some things come up family-wise that took 10 days that I didn't plan on, and it's just the way it is. It's the way our industry works. But, you know, it's one of those things that I look forward to it all year long. You know, we just got off a long sports show season, which was really good. I think everybody kind of thought doom and gloom at the start of the sports show season. But it was good. I mean, we had a lot of interest. We released a new boat. So, you know, once you get in the rhythm of sports shows, it kind of just goes, and you're going from one to the next every weekend, and then you kind of wrap that up, and then it's get focused and get ready for fishing. And, you know, our industry's changed so much over the last 26 years that now it's the amount of electronics we're putting on our boats. I've got 5 graphs on my boat. I've got, you know, side imaging, down imaging, 2D sonar, and then forward facing Mega Live imaging. So, and I've got that for my co-anglers too. And that's one of the things that's really evolved is obviously the forward facing sonar stuff. And you're hearing a lot of talk about that, but, I'm sure we can get into that here in a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, going to Lake Erie is always, you know, something you look forward to. And, the population right now on Lake Erie is great again. We've been out here the last few years, and the fish just keep getting bigger and bigger, and it's just an amazing fishery. Anytime you can go someplace and have an average of, you know, nowadays 6 to 7 pounds, it's definitely fun.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, like, even just like an hour ago before I called you, you know, thinking about, you know, you guys, you tournament guys, you know, high level tournament guys, but somebody like you specifically, like, you've been in this industry for more than, you know, a couple decades, and that doesn't even mean you're an old man. You got a lot of years left in you. I don't even want to come off like that. But has preparation for the first big tournament of the year ever been easy in your career?
No, it really hasn't. You know, it's obviously it takes a village to do what I do, and I've been really lucky to have a great support system via friends and everybody that want to pitch in and help. Joe Carlson was nice enough to help me rig my boat this year again, like he always does. And it's things like that that make this world go around. And I mean, because we can't do it all on our own. I mean, between getting the boat wrapped, getting the truck wrapped, you know, getting tackle prepped, you know, family at home. I mean, it's all those things getting ready. And, you know, this one isn't bad in April, but once we get into May and June, I'm going from tournament to tournament to tournament. You know, I'm fishing both bass and walleye.
Yep.
So for me, it's just one of those things that once I get dead in the season, it's just go time, and I need to rely on some people to help me out, whether it's at home on the farm or just, you know, on the road. It's you can't do it without a village, and that's really what it takes.
Yeah, man, it's just, you know, it's just all those necessary evils. It's like if you really had like this really great boat set up and you could just carry that year to year and you didn't have to go through all that. But, you know, without the sponsors and without having, you know, the cutting edge stuff every year, it's also hard to be competitive, you know, year in and year out. So I sort of see it from the outside in, but I like hearing those stories. It kind of, you know, it's... you know, people might just see all the fancy, you know, they see all the shiny stuff that you know, on social media where you guys are out there doing your thing, but the behind the scenes is just, you know, it's like the tip of the iceberg. You know, it's like, we get to see and consume, you know, the best 10%, but I mean, there's just a lot of moving water under the surface.
Well, absolutely, and that's the key point. I mean, you know, everybody thinks being a professional angler is just freaking awesome, and all you do is get to go fish, and that's definitely not the case. I mean, it's nonstop, whether it's sponsor obligations, whether it's, you know, product development, if it's doing seminars or podcasts or whatever it is, there's a lot more to the business. I mean, when I first started, I would definitely say that initially it was probably 80% fishing and probably 20% marketing. Now it's 80% marketing and 20% fishing. So there's a lot that definitely goes into the whole thing.
When I have somebody that has 26 years experience professional fishing, it's like I love hearing some of that. I like hearing some of that, you know, the business side of things a little bit. I think it's just a great story to tell. But, you know, throughout your career, you know, I'm just thinking about you right now. You know, you're driving to the first big tournament of the year. You've driven to the first big tournament of the year. You know, again, you've been doing this 26 years. I imagine the feelings and the anticipation for that sort of has changed for you. Again, I don't want to assume too much, but, you know, I think of probably early in a guy's career, you know, when you're worrying about the fishing and you're anxious and excited to go get the fishing in. Does that ever wear off for you? Like now, is it, are you a little bit more relaxed about the fishing? Are you a little bit more comfortable? You got that experience. You know what you're getting into. Like when does that switch sort of flip for you to the fishing? Is it in the pre-fish? Is it, was it last week rigging the boat? Is it the first day of the tournament? Like when does that really go off?
Well, I don't know. I mean, every time we go to a body of water, whether I've been there 100 times or whether I've been there, you know, it's the first time going there, it's always a new body of water. And if you don't treat it like that, you end up getting caught in fishing memories, and that just doesn't work anymore. I mean, you know, look at our industry and how much it's changed over time. So it's all evolved, and you just got to stay with an open mindset, and you got to stay focused all the time. And for me, yeah, I mean, leading up to the season, you literally have to take it day by day. I mean, I could have panicked last week when things weren't, you know, falling in line and things weren't there and different pieces of the puzzle weren't in place, but it does you no good. All you do is really screw up your mind and not stay focused on, you know, tasks at hand. So you just try to pick up and do something else. You know, I had some product that wasn't there, so I just decided to go rig rods and get that out of the way, something that I'd normally do the day or, you know, two before I left. So instead, I just chose to do something else and just stay focused and making sure that in the long run, everything's in line.
Let's maybe transition into the fishing a little bit. Finding and catching big fish, like overall, what are the keys to success there? When you're pre-fishing, Lake Erie, it's a giant place. That's just an example, but you know, somebody that's, you're listening to this that maybe likes to fish Lake of the Woods or even Mille Lacs, like close to where you're from. I mean, there's a lot of examples of big water, and some of these tips we could take from, for that sort of application, like going and breaking down water. Like what's your style for going and figuring out the pieces to the puzzle?
You know, I'm actually pretty lucky, you know, with some of my sponsors that I have some good companies to work with. And like Hummingbird, for example, Lake Master breaks down the lake like instantly for me. But you know, the biggest thing when you come to a body of water like this, obviously the internet tells it all right now. I mean, you don't have to go far and you can see just about everything you want to see on the internet. So utilize that to your advantage. But also, once you get out on the water, it's literally just putting time on your engine and driving and driving and driving and not having that urge to, oh, there's a fish, I'm going to stop and fish. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that you got to just put some hours on the motor and your electronics and see kind of what's happening. The first thing you want to do is, you know, I know going to Erie right now that we're in that transition, right? These fish are either going to spawn or, and you're going to have fish in every aspect of the spawn right now. You're going to have pre-spawn, you're going to have post-spawn, you're going to have a little bit of everything. So knowing that, targeting those areas where these fish spawn, and just putting hours on the motor and electronics and driving around. And it's amazing now how good our electronics are. If you're not marking fish, do not stop and fish. I'm telling you, it's so key to pay attention to your electronics. And I'm literally marking fish at, you know, 20 to 30 miles an hour. So I can cover a lot of area in a short period of time, as long as weather permits. And it looks like what we're getting into isn't going to permit driving around at 20 or 30. But, I mean, you can still cover a lot of water with your big motor and just try to find those big pods of fish. And when you come to a body of water like Erie, it's literally all about going through numbers. And it's literally, you know, catch 20 good ones and or catch 20 fish and maybe have one good one. So, you know, I may have to go through 50, 60, 70 fish to get five good ones for the tournament. So, and it's cold water this time of year. That's the other thing that, you know, this one's going to be one of those ones that's going to be interesting when you talk about forward-facing sonar. Do I think it will work? Absolutely. Do I think weather conditions are going to allow us to do it? Because that's one of the things. You have to have great boat control when, you know, I mean, if you're out in 4 and 5 footers, it makes it really difficult to try to catch fish on forward-facing sonar. The next thing is the water's cold. Are these fish going to want to chase? Typically, this time of year, these fish aren't really acclimated to chasing something very far or very fast. So you kind of have to just stay focused and figure out what they want. It really comes down to finding the right water. You know, Erie has a tendency to get muddy and dirty at times. And it's finding that right water clarity. That's something on a Mille Lacs or something like that, or a Leech or a Winnie or a Devil's Lake, you typically don't get really dirty water. But here, this time of year with spring runoff and everything else, it's one of those things that, you know, it can get dirty and muddy real quick. And then you just have to drive around and try to find fishable water.
A couple of things I want to dive in there is, you know, that high speed graphing. It's a hard thing to, you know, do for the first time. Do you have any sort of entry level tips or tricks? Maybe it's just the settings on the graph or anything like that. I mean, what are some kind of like, you know, just sort of that entry level tips for somebody that's going to, you know, try to do some or utilize high speed graphing, you know, maybe for the first time? Probably not a first time angler, probably somebody that has some experience, you know, people that are thinking about this, or maybe this is, you know, somebody's going to try this. But I feel like anything there would probably be just a really useful tool when we're talking about breaking down big water like Lake Erie.
So the first thing is number one, having your transducer mounted right. You know, I have two transducers on my boat. I have a through hull that actually shoots through the fiberglass. And there again, it's because our electronics have gotten so good and so powerful that you can actually shoot right through the hull. And then I have a side imaging transducer on the back. So both of those are useful tools. But number one, just making sure you have your transducers mounted right so you get a good reading at those higher speeds. You know, maybe it's adjusting it down or maybe it's adjusting it up a little bit. That's the first and foremost. Second of all, you know, start out at a slower speed and just continually pick up your pace until you understand what you're reading. And so a lot goes into making a fish arc, the fish going under the transducer fully. So what I'm getting at is if I go over a fish and I only get a half an arc, that means the fish on the outside of the cone. But what you'll see when you're actually going fast is that it won't look like an arc. It's actually going to be a spike. and what you'll see is those spikes, and that's what you look for. And then when you slow down, so if you start seeing things on your graph that you typically don't see, you'll go for a period of time and you won't see anything, and then all of a sudden on your graph you see a spike. There's where you want to start slowing down and looking at the size of the fish, and your graph will tell you. I mean, look at the arcs. You know, are they relating to bait? Are they relating to structure? Those types of things. And it just helps you break down that system a lot easier.
This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Chalet on Mille Lacs. The Chalet on Mille Lacs has all your lodging needs and more for your next vacation on Mille Lacs Lake near Garrison, Minnesota. And when I say this lodging opportunity has all your needs and more, I'm talking about two private shorelines, including a protected channel to safely park your boat overnight, a great outdoor feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake, a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom that includes 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multi-families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews from past guests on the website or book directly at Chalet on Mille Lacs. That's www.chaletonmillelacs.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Experience the thrills of an unforgettable fishing experience like never before with Flop Industries. Whether you're a novice angler or a seasoned veteran, Flop Industries products are meticulously designed to enhance your fishing experience when it's time to hit the water. Join our community by visiting flopindustries.com and elevate your passion for fishing with gear that matches both your skills and your style. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. I think, you know, managing your speed, I think, right away, I think that's a great tip, because I feel like that's where, you know, those are some of those tips that, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I've consumed every last piece of content out there on high-speed trolling or high-speed graphing, but I feel like, you know, most of the people that are making that content have so much experience with it that they almost, you know, they almost kind of forget to add in some of those little key elements. You know, for somebody that's trying it for the first time, it can just really be a daunting task and you're just not with it. But I feel like that right there could probably, you know, save somebody a whole lot of time and deliver some confidence early. I think that's a great tip for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is, you know, so many people with the new electronics just want, I mean, and I get it, because they don't get a lot of time to go fishing.
Right.
You know, and so when you don't get a lot of time to go fishing, the first thing you want to do is you mark fish. You want to go fishing, right?
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, if you just take the time to learn your electronics, put your rods away for a little bit, spend some time on the water with just your electronics or somebody that really knows what your electronics can do, it will make you a better fisherman in the long run. And maybe it's just a day. I don't, you know, if you don't get a lot of time on the water, maybe it's just a day. Maybe you can't find somebody to go fishing with you. Leave your rods at home and just go for a boat ride. Put hours on your motor. Adjust your sensitivities. Adjust your settings. Do different things with your electronics to try to figure out what works best for you. And it's no different than forward-facing sonar. I mean, you know, that was a huge learning curve for all of us is this forward-facing sonar. And it's, you know, I was doing a seminar this winter, and I said it's kind of a young man's sport. A lot of the people in here aren't used to, you know, looking at their screen the whole time. Well, an 86-year-old said, I use mine all the time. Well, there you go. I mean, it's somebody that takes the time to learn it that understands how much it can improve your day of fishing.
Another thing you said earlier, you know, talking about water clarity, you know, like her finding the right water. I'm curious, you know, I've talked to guys about that before. That's always, you know, something that gets made mention of in these conversations. But I feel like, you know, one question I've always had is like, how do you manage that in a tournament setting when you're going out there? If you're, say, in pre-fish, you know, say you have a good pre-fish, say you break something down, maybe say you find something and you're getting prepared for day one, and you feel like you got something put together, you know, you got the right water, knowing that, you know, all those elements are important, you know, how do you play a little defense, or how do you have, or what does your plan B and C sort of look like when your water gets blowed out, or when that changes drastically? You know, I guess my question is, like, when do you decide to go to leave those fish all together and go find something new? Or, you know, when do you try to make it work, or just find out where those fish went, or just try to find, you know, find that water? Like what does plan B, C, and D look like with those factors?
You know, that's a great question. And here's the prime example. I mean, there's a good chance that we might get one or two good days of practice in at this particular tournament. I mean, I'm headed out there right now. I'm downtown Chicago, and the forecast tomorrow looks like 35 miles an hour out of the west. And so, you know, I mean, that means the lake's going to get blown out, and it'll take a couple days to settle out. And you literally have to be on your feet at all times. And when I talk about water clarity, literally, I'll drive and drive and drive until I say, oh, that water looks a little bit right, and I'll stop the boat, I'll run back to my Yamaha, and I'll look in the water and see if I can see my stainless prop. If I can see my stainless prop, that tells me that the water clarity is good enough that a fish can see my bait, and then I'll start looking in that area. But, I mean, there's times where, I mean, and the co-angler, really, they think you're nuts. I mean, you might drive for 2 hours and not put a line in the water on tournament day, especially on Erie or Green Bay. And Green Bay, it might be just a water temperature deal. All of a sudden you had a strong west wind, and all that cold water from the bottom of the lake rolled up on that west shore. Well, it does you no good to fish. I mean, the fish aren't there. They followed the warm water wherever it went. So now it's your job to go find the right water. And that's a lot of times what happens. And I might drive 50 miles and all of a sudden that water's blowing out. And now I got to go find something. So then I freaking spin back around, or, you know, follow the direction that I think that water went. There's tools that you can use during practice, you know, whether it's satellite imagery or whether it's water temperature or current maps and things like that, that kind of give you an idea of what the water's doing. Now, obviously, that changes every body of water, and a lot of people don't understand this, whether we talk about Devil's Lake, North Dakota, whether we talk about Lake Sakakawea, a reservoir system, or whether we talk about an inland body of water, there's always current, and a lot of people don't understand that. They're like, well, I live on an inland lake, and there is no current. There's no rivers that flow through here. Well, you constantly have a wind current, so that lake water just doesn't stay stagnant all the time. It's constantly moving, whether it's wind-driven or whatever it is. There's always some type of water movement, so the right water can move instantly on any given body of water, and that's just something you got to go look for, and our electronics are so good now that you know instantly whether the fish are there or not. And if they aren't there, then you just put time on your engine again and go look. You know, I drive my Skeeter around all the time looking for the right water.
Is there anything predictable about that? Like when you're out on Erie, and again, you know, I'm just kind of like working through this where, you know, when you have a couple days in and, you know, you got a feel for, you know, what the current conditions are that day. Is there anything, you know, is that something that's at all predictable for the next day or 2 days from now? Like, if you're looking at the forecast and you're looking at the predicted wind, if all that stuff comes true and you have all that information available to you, can you, after a couple days of being out there, can you at all predict or you know, have any confidence that you would know what direction to go then in that scenario?
Yeah, a lot of times you do, and it's just the natural movement of the fish on Lake Erie. You know, those fish start out in that western basin. A lot of them spawn up in Detroit River. A lot of them spawn on the reefs around Fort Clinton, around the islands. Some run up in the Maumee. So all those tributaries or areas that those fish spawn, once they spawn and do their thing, then they get into their transition where they start heading east. And those fish, I mean, you literally can just pattern those fish in the direction their natural instinct has them going. And it's a lot of times, you know, those fish, that school of fish that you find, that's the right school, might move a mile a day, might move 2 miles. And so literally what we'll do, let's just say I find fish during practice here and I know where they're at. The next day I go out and find them and they're a little bit further east. And then the next day they're a little bit further east. So the first thing I'm going to do on tournament morning is I'm going to drive through all my waypoints and follow that direction those fish are moving. And until I find the right water and the right area and start marking fish, then I'm going to start fishing. But up until then, I won't fish. I mean, I'm not just going to, okay, I caught 5 10-pounders right here the other day. I'm going to start fishing. That's not the case. I mean, it's literally relocate those fish every day and try to figure out, you know, where they are in the water column. These fish constantly move up and down in the water column. I mean, they might be 5 foot. I mean, typically here we're fishing anywhere from over 40 to 30 foot of water in the Western Basin. And those fish could be anywhere from dead on the bottom or in the middle of the water column, or they could be 5 foot below the surface. So pay attention to your electronics. You know, that first pass I make, I'm going to have baits all over. And then I'll dial it in as time goes on. But I'm going to continue to watch my electronics, because in case those fish decide to make a different change or move, then I'll make some adjustments.
Last big topic I want to kind of dive into is like sharing information. Like, you know, between anglers, and I don't mean like specifically you and other tournament anglers, but just in general, anglers, you know, we have our fishing buddies. And, you know, when we're communicating about a good bite or, you're communicating information, you know, out on Erie, you know, besides waypoints, I like leaving waypoints out of the conversation. So waypoints aside, you know, what are kind of the key pieces of information that you would want, either to find out, you know, from your, you know, partners, or if you found something besides the waypoints, what are the key pieces of information that you would try to share? Like how would you share that information? Like what would that sound like?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I mean, number one, areas, and just knowing how these fish move, areas are key, not waypoints, just areas, colors, and speed is super dependent this time of year. You know, it's the water temperature is cold still. I don't know what the water temperature is. I haven't talked to anybody that's been on the water, but knowing what the water temperature is, and there's a transition that normally happens about this time of year, just depending on the water. Now, we obviously got a big blow coming, so that's going to stir up that water a little bit. But once that water like hits that 50 degree mark, that's when they start transitioning over to spinners or spoons or those types of things. Typically early in the season, it's going to be cranks, trolled very slow, like you'd normally pull a spinner, you know, that 0.8 to 1.3, 1.4 mile an hour. So it's going super slow. And that's the other thing, right? I mean, if you're only going that slow, you don't cover a lot of water like you normally would, you know, midsummer, where you're really cruising with crankbaits, you're doing 2.2, 2.3. Well, you can cover a lot of water. Now you've cut that in half. So now your amount of area you're fishing is a lot smaller. So knowing the speed is critical, and then color. I mean, color is huge out here. It changes all the time. So I mean, I try not to get stuck in that pattern of okay, they're on purples or they're on whites, or, you know, you got to look at water clarity. You got to look at the sky. One day it may be sunny. They were on chromes. The next day it's cloudy and a little more stained water. So now I'm going to go to dark baits that cast a big shadow that these fish can locate. Maybe the water's cold. I'm going to take a piece of crawler and tip the back of my crankbait, or take a piece of gulp and tip the back of my crankbait. There's things like that that you can do that kind of put the odds in your favor and help you in the long run. So, but those are some of the keys, you know, of really what's, what it takes to put together a good day, and try to beat. I mean, it sounds like we have 141 anglers here at the first tournament, so that's great to know. And it's going to be fun. You know, Erie's always fun, and it's just a destination place. I mean, I've been headed east here all morning, and I've just seen a string of boats coming back. I mean, you know, Erie's bite goes for a long time, and it's a lot of fun. And if you've never taken that destination trip, you really should. If you've got the means or the boat to do it, go do it, because you will absolutely have a blast.
You know, you're mentioning color, like, color forever with a lot of top-end anglers, or hasn't historically been, at least for me in the interviews I do, you know, just with the people, you know, color isn't always, like, really at the top of the list. You know, like Jason always says, you know, if I'm in the right place at the right time around the right fish, usually I can get away with the wrong color, you know, things like that. But it feels like color is really in right now. You know, at least in the last couple of years, with like forward sonar, just learning behaviors and just seeing how many fish are down there, you know, and putting baits in front of them. It feels like color is so much more in right now. Like, how do you feel about that? Have you always been a color guy? Or, you know, kind of where does that stand up with you? I mean, even just the big picture, you know, you're talking Erie, but like, you know, it just feels like color is really in, I feel like.
Well, there's a couple things that I pay attention to with color, and it's not so much having a ton of different colors. It's having, you know, colors for situations. So, and Jason's 100% right. You know, you can get by with the wrong colors if you're in amongst a lot of fish. But the difference is when you dial in that right color, that bite goes from good to great. And that's the difference, you know, and like I said earlier, it's going through the numbers. So I want to dial in that color the best I can. But there's, I mean, when I talk about color, it's all due to water clarity and sky colors. And giving the fish the best opportunity to see those baits. And this is something, you know, I mean, if you look at my bass side of things, I can basically have, you know, four or five colors and be good for everything. You know, a black, blue, a green pumpkin, a green pumpkin, black fleck, June bug. You know, those basic colors cover a lot of aspects of bass fishing. But in the walleye side of things, I feel like it's the right sound, it's the right color. Everything goes, I mean, do they want a silent bait? Do they want a bait with rattles? Do they want, there's so many different variables to what goes on. And when we talk about forward-facing sonar, it's the fall rate that triggers those fish, or just having those right colors and things like that that will really make that bite better. Do they want a reaction? So now I'm going to throw a real heavy bait, let it drop down in front of them, and they're going to pin it to the bottom. Or they being lethargic and not wanting to chase, so now I'm going to take something that it's going to take a long time to get to them, but it's going to stay in their face the longest. So there's a lot of variables that go into it, but that's just some examples of what I pay attention to, whether I'm trolling, whether I'm pitching jigs in the weeds where I'm going to try to match the hatch. Are they feeding on bluegills? Are they feeding on crappies? Are they feeding on perch? Those types of things, I can get a little bit more natural type colors. In a river situation, is it dirty? I'm going to throw a real dark bait or a white bait. You know, a lot of people say, oh man, the water's dirty, I'm going to throw a chartreuse or something. I'll challenge you to do this sometime. If you think chartreuse is the best color in a dirty water situation, take and drop your chartreuse bait down. See how far you can see it down. Now take a real dark bait like a black or even a white and drop it down. And I guarantee you the blacks or whites will show up better than your chartreuse. And those are just some of the things that I've kind of dialed in over the years and really paid attention to, just trying to get the most bites throughout the day.
I mean, I take a lot from that, you know, just, you know, kind of the concept of refining a bite with color. You know, I think Jake Romanak said that recently. I was interviewing him, and I like, he kind of had like a, just kind of a one-liner, you know, color doesn't define, you know, a pattern, but it can refine a pattern. And the way you explain that makes so much sense that, you know, in a situation where numbers is the game, and again, I try to relate this to a non-tournament angler, like everybody's going out there to catch as many fish as they can, right? And so I just feel like that color is so in. I mean, not that it hasn't been, but definitely, you know, with learning and, you know, tips and tricks and just things we can take away from a great interview, you know, finding fish is so important. And, you know, just, you know, talking about all those things, but color is totally in.
And I relate that to everything I do, you know, whether it's duck hunting, you know, are they feeding on small grain? Are they feeding on corn? I'm not going to go set up in a cornfield when I know they're feeding on small grain. I mean, that it's just, or are deer, you know, feeding on acorns in the hardwoods? Are they out in the alfalfa fields, or, you know, are they on the soybeans right now? That's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to where the, you know, whatever I'm chasing is at. So it's just putting that type of mentality into what you do.
You're a bass guy too. I mean, we, you know, I kind of get walleye centric on here, but you've been fishing high level bass tournaments for a really long time. So this stage in your career, what could you say? Do you feel like you've brought more bass fishing into the walleye world, or do you bring more walleye fishing into your bass strategy? Like, what's your balance there?
I'd say we bring more walleye strategy. I mean, you got to remember the walleye guys have been offshore fishing for ages. You know, we were the ones that were out on those mid-lake humps. We were the ones that were out on those weed lines or rock, sand, mud transition lines. You know, you can take that to the bass side of things. And now the bass guys have caught up, right? I mean, it's real easy now to get in the game. You watch these college anglers. I mean, they're absolutely phenomenal when they get to the professional levels. And that's because they've grown up with everything that we've taught them, right? I mean, there's so much, you know, back in the day with print media, with all that, you could read about things and techniques and take that to the next level. Well, now you freaking YouTube it and it's in your face. Like, here's what you do. You know, I'm going to Lake Fork in, you know, February. What do I need to do? Or where do I need to look? Or, you know, I'm going to, doesn't matter, the Missouri River smallmouth fishing, you know, what do I need to do? Where do I need to look? And it's broken down so much for you now that it just gives you the opportunity to grow your resources that much quicker and better. But it definitely, the walleye guys have taught the bass guys. I mean, you look at, you know, like I'm with Ben Cota. I mean, Spotlock changed the industry. I mean, we never used to even imagine not chucking an anchor out and anchoring up on a rock pile to go fishing. Well, now Spotlock and every trolling motor brand's got them now, right? But when Ben Cota came out with it, that was industry changing. And the first thing the bass guys said is, oh, we won't use that. And I'm like, oh yeah, you will. And now you look at them and everybody is using it. And I mean, it's those types of things that this, and you know, there's the big talk right now with this older generation, especially on the bass side, not so much on the walleye side, but on the bass side, especially that, you know, this older generation's mad that these younger kids are coming in and beating them. Well, you know, this younger generation learn from you. So kind of take that with a little bit of pride too, right? I mean, like a lot of what they're doing is because of you. You designed that bait that they're throwing or, you know, you created electronics or you took that trolling motor to the next level with engineers. And that's the other thing that people don't understand about the fishing industry. We're working with engineers all the time, you know, whether it's new product on the boat that's not even out or released or new baits. I mean, I've got a couple baits coming out at ICAST that I'm super stoked about that are going to be just phenomenal. But I mean, it's that side of the industry that a lot of people don't see. It's constantly working boats. I mean, you know, we just released a new boat at Minneapolis Boat or at Sports Show, you know, that I had a lot of input in. So it's things like that when you look at this next generation of fishermen coming in, it's because of what the guys in the past have done. And those guys got to take that to heart. And if you're mad that they're beating you with forward-facing sonar, then spend time with forward-facing sonar. Forget your flipping sticks at home. Forget touching the bottom, you know, with your rod tip to make sure you're shallow enough to catch a fish.
Yeah.
Spend time out deep, you know, spend time where you're uncomfortable and make yourself comfortable doing these new techniques. Cause it's here to stay. And if it's not forward facing sonar, if for some reason these states say, you know, we're done with forward facing sonar, it's too hard on our fishing populations or whatever it is, a limit's a limit at the end of the day. I mean, a guy can't catch more than his limit. So it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, but it's those types of things that put yourself in an uncomfortable position. Go spend it the middle, you know, go out to the middle of a lake or, you know, go deeper than you normally would fish and put your electronics down and use your forward facing sonar and try to figure out. I mean, there's guys good enough on the walleye tour now that can call their, can basically call their fish within a pound, you know, of what they're going to catch. And that's because they've spent time doing it.
Not like a big monumental opinion or anything like that, but I feel like, you know, the comparison in history of just some of the innovation and all, you know, all the progression, you know, of stuff and then how it translated in the tournament world. You know, people talk a lot about, you know, spot lock being one of them, being a big one, map chips being a big one, you know, and even just a lot of the engineering and the, you know, the lures and presentations, you know, braided line, you know, just all these efficiencies and all these things. But it seems like, you know, this is just kind of me. It's like, you know, how come forward sonar is getting picked on so heavily by, you know, like you said, kind of that generation ahead of us here? Like, I feel like maybe there's something there where a lot of the stuff that came before that was a really big deal kind of, you know, as far as usability, like everybody got it and was probably able to benefit from it in a similar way. I feel like forward sonar requiring, you know, needing that nuance, needing that time and experience, and it's expensive. Like the fact that it doesn't benefit everybody so easily right away, it's like, you know, for some of these people that might be tripping over it, you know, where spot lock, everybody conceptually probably figured out where, how spot lock benefited them within a season, or, you know, or some, maybe that's not true, but, you know, you see where I'm going with that. It's like almost like forward sonar gets picked on just because it's the one great thing that has come that some people are picking up better than others. So, I mean, I don't, you know, jealousy's the wrong word or just, you know, or whatever, but there's definitely some prejudice there that, you know, we paid our dues without the, you know, without this technology, and that's what fishing is defined in my world. And if you don't define, you know, fishing the same way I do, like, I feel like that's the hiccups. Like people say, well, you know, an angler that isn't as good or proficient at all aspects of fishing anymore, you know, can still win tons of money in a tournament just because he's a one-trick pony. He's got that forward sonar. But, man, that's just the evolution of the industry. That's somebody putting a tremendous amount of time in. And I don't know. I just feel like maybe that's a little bit part of it, and probably 5 years from now, well, it'll be a little bit of a wash. But,
you know, it really goes hand in hand. I mean, we can take that to the next level where, I mean, okay, cell phone cameras. If you're a deer hunter, a turkey hunter, or a big game hunter, cell phone cameras have changed that game. I mean, so it's not, and everybody can do that, right? It's real easy. Go buy a cell phone camera, put them up. Well, that's not that easy either, because you still have to know the movement of those animals to try to figure out where those, the right animals that you're trying to target are moving. But with forward-facing sonar, you know, Jason does a really good job in all the teaching that he does, you know, on all his social media platforms. But here's the one thing about forward-facing sonar that Jason can't do. He can't be in your boat with the water clarity you're fishing and tell you exactly how to set up your unit. You have to take the time to understand,
yes,
what the sensitivity, what contrast, what all that does to your screen. And every day it's not, okay, I caught him with my sensitivity at 80%, let's just say. Well, the next day I might have to adjust my sensitivity down to 60% to see what I did the day before, or I might have to go to 100% to see what I did the day before. So it's adjusting things like that. And the only way you're going to do that is to do it. And I mean, we can all give you the settings that we run. It does you no good unless you're where I'm at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of it. I think that's part of that big picture when we compare, or when, you know, when these conversations come up with just, you know, all the most impactful, things that came prior to Forward Sonar, you know, they were just so more, you know, easily accepted. I feel like just because teaching it was so much simpler. But Forward Sonar is an interesting thing to teach digitally. You really,
yeah,
it's a totally different thing. It's hard to read an article about Forward Sonar and then go out and be good at it right then.
Because the fish are moving constantly. You're trying to locate the fish. You know, there's so many things that go into it. But I mean, you know, we can go back to the, you know, down imaging days where all of a sudden I understood what my 2D sonar was telling me. I'm going over a tree because now I can see a branch. Now I can see the bait fish in the trees or the brush pile or whatever it was. And now I understand what I was looking at. Before, on 2D sonar, it was just clutter. Well, then 360 came out. Now I can see all the way around my boat. I can see those rock piles. I can see what I want to target. So, yeah, I mean, it's evolution of the sport. And it's just one of those things that this generation, my generation, or guys just a little bit older than me, just really struggle with, because they were dominant at certain points of their game, and it's just changed. I mean, it's a changing of the guard, and you got these young kids, and you know, that's the one thing about college anglers. Every tournament they fish, they get into a, you know, 80 or 90 boat tournament. Well, that's pretty easy. I mean, you go from a 250 boat tournament to a 90 boat tournament to a 250 boat tournament, it changes. I mean, like, it's a whole different aspect.
Yeah, dude. Oh man. Yeah, we could go for like another 2 hours on this for sure.
We could.
I think really could. We've covered everything I had notes for, Mark. I just wanted to get caught up with you, and you know, things you've been up to lately, what the off season looks like for you, getting ready for these, getting ready for another season. 26 years you've been doing this, so impressive. And good luck this season for sure. I appreciate all the tips. You know, the high speed, graphing was definitely, I think that I just get a lot away from those tips and tricks for sure. And talking about, water clarity and color, I think those are also just right now, those are just those fun things that all the anglers out there that are playing tackle in their garage are just thinking about, like thinking about where you're going to fish and just, you know, doing all that research that's online. Like you said, I mean, there's so much information we can get online to get us prepared for, you know, a fishing trip, and all those things factor in. So that's really what I had for you, Mark, man. Anything else that just pops into your head that you think we forgot? Otherwise, time limit. This is exactly the time limit that I'm shooting for. And we can sign it off if you're ready, promote yourself. If people ever want to follow along on your tournament exploits, where can we find you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just add one more thing. You know, this is the time of year that is the best time, especially, like I'm from Minnesota, so our walleyes are closed, so you can't really target them. But now is the time where, those panfish are up there shallow. That's the best time to learn your forward-facing sonar, if that's what you're into. But yeah, you can follow along at Mark Kortz Fishing, Mark Kortz on Facebook, Instagram, all my social media channels. It's either Mark Kortz Fishing or Mark Kortz, and you can find me there. And yeah, love to have you follow along. And we're going to be producing some fun content this summer. And absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Golden, man. All right, well, safe travels out there. We will be paying attention and definitely rooting for you. Hopefully everything goes good.
Sounds good, pal. Have a good day.
Yep, we'll talk to you.
See ya.